The events of the past week in Littleton, Colorado, I know have been on the hearts and minds of so many of us this morning. We really cannot help but, even in this beautiful setting, on this great day of celebration and remembering, really have our hearts tugged and our nerves touched by the events of what has happened over there. I know that all of us have been praying and thinking of them and the victims and their families. And we try to share whatever emotions we can conjure up that might relate to what is being faced over there, even though I would assume that many of us have not ever had anything like this happen to their families. And our first instinct, I suppose, as a church and as individuals, is to pray. And I know that that is something that all of us have been doing for the people over there. It is our gut instinct. It's our knee-jerk reaction as faithful people to pray and think about people that we have never met but have faced a tragedy in their lives. But if you're like me this past week, you have maybe even wondered if prayer is enough, that with the incredible tragedy that has happened there, maybe there's a thought that, well, prayer is a very shallow response to a tragedy that is very real and very deep. And so that is what I'm thinking about this morning. What is the church supposed to do for the events in Littleton and events like it around the world? Is it enough to do what we're doing, or should we be doing more? I want to say, don't get me wrong, I believe in the power of prayer, and I think that it is a necessary response that we as a church do, to not only pray, but be very concerned about what's happening over there. But is there another response ability that we have? Has God given us another ability to respond to what has happened and what may be happening in the future again? And as we wade through the myriad of possibilities, our waters become muddied by the impulse that we all have as our society today to assign blame. We live in a blame apportioning society today, don't we? Already in our media and in our newspapers and in maybe in our own conversations, we have been quick to look to find who is to blame for what has happened. And we have already heard a number of candidates. If only the school system did a better job isolating and counseling troubled teens, you might have heard or might have even said. If only parents took more interest in their children's behavior. If only we took guns off the streets or made them harder to acquire. If only fundamentalists would stop their campaign of hatred and anti-government rhetoric. If only liberals would allow corporal punishment in the schools and in the homes. If only we had more discipline. If only we had more compassion. If only, if only, if only. Our society has become pros at playing the blame game. And instances and events like this have reminded us of how quick we are to look for blame. But is that the church's right response? Certainly it has been entrusted with a prophetic voice to look for blame and to look for the wrongs of our society. But is that the right response for something like this today? True enough, we're responsible to be active forces in our communities to face the systemic ills that are all around us, and to carry out that prophetic voice. And maybe months, years from now, after those residents have settled back into whatever normalcy they can, we can adopt once again that right response of being a prophetic blaming force in our communities. That is a right response for the church. But this morning I want to address that question in another way, by looking at the scripture passage that was read earlier this morning. Weeks ago, in planning for this Heritage Sunday service, I picked 1 Peter 1:3-9, not knowing at all what would have happened before this service. It's a wonderful passage. It talks about our common spiritual heritage in Jesus Christ. It talks about our triumph and our victory through Jesus' resurrection. It talks about our hope for the future. It's a great passage to use for a Heritage Sunday. And it was in the lectionary, too, so that made it convenient as well. But to be honest, with what has happened this past week, I find myself with a different perspective on the passage, wanting to ask a different question than maybe what I would have asked had these things not happened. What is the church's response to such acts of evil? And at first it might seem like an inappropriate question to ask of this passage, because it doesn't seem to want to talk about evil in the world. Peter's letter to the church talks about victory and joy. It talks about triumph over evil. It talks about our common spiritual heritage and the hope that we have, victory, new life, good things, intended to put a smile on the faces of people. But how do we mourn and interact with this passage? That's tough to do until we consider the audience that Peter was writing to. The audience that Peter was writing to in the first church had this as its description. And you can tell me if this sounds at all like the society that we live in today. The church that Peter was writing to lived in a world where innocent people suffered and died for no justifiable reason. The church that Peter wrote to lived in a world where the church struggled to find its voice amidst persecution and violence. The church that Peter wrote to lived in a world where Jesus Christ was not the only God, but was one of many in a pantheon of other gods and worship deities. The church that Peter wrote to was in a world where the church was scattered geographically, theologically, and spiritually. It was a world that seemed to be going to, quote, hell in a handbasket with no reason for hope or security. Does that sound at all familiar? I think if you take a look at Peter's world, you'd say that it was our world as well. And whatever Peter had to tell that church is very relevant to what Peter has to tell us today. The Personnel Journal reported this incredible statistic that since the beginning of recorded history, the entire world has been at peace less than 8% of the time. In its study, the periodical discovered that of 3,530 years of recorded history, only 286 saw peace. Moreover, in excess of 8,000 peace treaties have been made since the beginning of recorded time, and all of them broken. A former president of the Norwegian Academy of Sciences and historians from England, Egypt, Germany, and India have come up with some other startling information. Since 3600 BC, the world has only known 292 years of peace, they said. During this period, there have been 14,351 wars, large and small, in which 3.64 billion people have been killed. The value of the property that's been destroyed in that amount of time would pay for a golden belt that would go around the world 97.2 miles wide and 33 feet thick. Since 650 BC, there have been 1,656 arm races, only 16 of which have not ended in war. The remainder have ended in economic collapse for all the countries involved. As much as things change, the more they stay the same. The church has always lived in a violent time. It's always faced a time when innocent people suffer. The power of the scriptures for us this morning, brothers and sisters, is that Peter's words are not relegated to a select few in the first century, but they can speak to us today. So what is the central message that Peter gives to the people of the first century and to the people of 1999? The simple message is, do not give up hope. It is a simple message to endure. For a church back then to suffer and see innocent people killed, it was the single most important message that Peter needed to give to the people then, and it is the message that we need to hear today, that we must not lose hope, even though it seems at times that we are fighting a losing battle against violence and innocent suffering. We are an Easter people, brothers and sisters. We have as our heritage the incredible joy of knowing that love has triumphed over hate, that life has triumphed over death. And the greatest thing that we can do to inherit the heritage that has been given to us is to carry on the message of a living hope, despite all that happens in the world around us, and to endure, to never, ever give up. A long time ago, a man sought the perfect picture of peace. He was a rich guy. He collected paintings from all over the world and decided that none of the pictures in his collection accurately for him embodied peace and suggested peace to him. So he had a worldwide contest for any painter or artisan to come up with a picture that symbolized peace, and the winner would get a hefty reward. The challenge stirred the imagination of artists everywhere, all around the world, and paintings arrived from far and wide. And they collected some of the best of the best and had a day set out to reveal the best offerings. The judges uncovered one peaceful scene after another, while the viewers who were there clapped and cheered. The tensions grew, and only two pictures were remaining in the final. As a judge pulled the cover from the first one, a hush fell over the crowd in amazement. The picture was a mirror smooth lake, reflected lacy green birches under the soft blush of the evening sky. And along the grassy shore, a flock of sheep grazed undisturbed. Beautiful picture. Could have very easily been a snapshot of what's behind me. Beautiful, peaceful, absolutely serene picture. Many in the audience clapped and cheered and thought for sure this would be the winner. And then the man with the vision uncovered the second painting himself, and the crowd gasped in surprise. Surely this painting couldn't be the winner. This wasn't a placid lake, it was a tumultuous waterfall. Violent, cascading waters from a very tall precipice coming down to rocks below. The crowd could almost feel its cold, penetrating spray. And above the waterfall in the background, you could see the stormy clouds and the rain and the thunder that was rolling in and the bitter chill that swept through that place. A spindly tree clung to the rocks at the edge of the falls. And on that spindly little tree, jutting out bravely into the waterfall, was of all things a bird's nest. And in that bird's nest were some baby birds. And on top of those baby birds was the mother bird, with her eyes closed and her wings ready to cover her little ones, protecting them from the spray, from the cold, from the rain. This was the painting that won. Painting that the artist, that this man thought, was the perfect symbol of peace. A painting that could very easily be interjected right into 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through 9. And a painting that I encourage you to keep in your minds as you read the newspapers, as you watch the television news shows, and hear about those events. Brothers and sisters, we are called to endure the waterfalls and the tumults and the thunderous storms that come our way, because we have a mother bird protecting us, a heritage that has been given to us because of a triumph of a man on a cross and an empty tomb. That is the living hope that we share. Our response to such acts of violence throughout the world? Here's an idea. Communicate living hope to people that you know. Listen to the wails and cries of those who are troubled. Even if they be troubled teens and high schoolers, or maybe your next door neighbor, or maybe someone living in your house, you have inherited a living hope from people who have come long before us. And it is our responsibility to never give up sharing that hope with everyone that we know. If you speak with someone who is struggling with their faith, share with them your sense of hope that comes from God who owns the future. If you feel within yourself a sense of despair, remember yourself of the peace of God which surpasses all understanding. And if you think of the children who are murdered in Colorado and of their grieving families and friends, you can remember the promise of 1 Peter. Here it is again. By His great mercy, He has given us a new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, and into an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, and unfading, kept in heaven for you. That's the Easter message. In the name of the Creator, the Redeemer, and the Sustainer of us all. Amen.